Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
Great to be back.
Today, we're embarking on an exploration of Kurdish literature. We'll be looking at various sources, trying to understand the traditions, the, key figures, recurring themes.
It's such a rich heritage.
It really is. Our aim today is essentially to uncover some of the most significant aspects from its, its ancient roots right up to the vibrant contemporary scene.
Think of it as a journey through the heart of Kurdish literary culture.
Exactly. Okay, let's begin by examining the foundational layers. It's quite remarkable, isn't it, that the very base is this really resilient oral tradition.
Yeah, stretching way back even into pre-Islamic times.
And what's fascinating is the sheer variety you find there. Myths, legends, epic poems, folk tales.
Everything. And these weren't just stories for entertainment,
Yeah.
They were absolutely fundamental.
How so?
Well, they transmitted cultural values, historical accounts, collective wisdom, generation after generation.
Right. It really highlights how culture can thrive, even persist, without necessarily relying on a written form initially.
Absolutely. And central to this was the Dengbej.
Ah, yes, the singing storyteller. Sounds incredible.
It really is. Imagine this figure, kind of a living archive, traveling between villages.
Performing at gatherings.
Exactly. Like a walking, talking history book, as you said.
And thinking about the bigger picture, especially those periods when writing in Kurdish was actively suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
The Dengbej tradition must have been absolutely vital.
Crucial for ensuring the continuity of Kurdish narratives, of cultural identity itself. It really shows that intimate link between cultural expression and, political power. Suppressing one is often an attempt to erase the other.
The sources mention the Turkish government historically imposed fines, even persecuted Dengbej just for speaking or singing in Kurdish.
That's right. But despite that pressure, performances were still secretly recorded, shared.
That just speaks volumes, doesn't it, about the spirit of this oral art form?
It really does. It raises that question about how cultural memory persists, under intense pressure. Those clandestine recordings, that was a powerful act of cultural resistance in itself.
And now there's a growing academic field looking into this Kurdish folklore.
Yes, with important contributions from folklorists like Hesia Sindi or Dixene Silil, Silile Silil.
So their work helps solidify the importance, the complexity of these oral traditions, taking them from just performance into academic study and preservation.
Exactly. Documenting it, analyzing it, giving it that scholarly recognition alongside its living role.
Okay, so transitioning from the oral to the beginnings of written Kurdish literature, one of the earliest figures we encounter is Ali Hariri.
Right, around the 11th century. He's seen as a really seminal figure in classical Kurdish Sufi literature, a foundational poet.
Writing in the Kurmanji dialect.
Yes. And his themes revolved around love, a really deep affection for Kurdistan, the beauty of the landscapes, the qualities of the people, that sort of thing.
It seems detailed information about his life is a bit limited, though.
It is. Actually, the 17th century poet, Emedi Zeni, was one of the first known writers to even mention Hariri.
But his work is still recognized for laying crucial groundwork, right? Especially for later poets in that Sufi tradition.
Absolutely. It marks a really important early step in the codification, the writing down, of Kurdish literature. Even with limited surviving texts, his significance as an early author writing in Kurdish is undeniable. Sets a precedent.
Then we have the role of classical Guarani literature. This is arguably the oldest codified Kurdish literary tradition.
You could certainly argue that, yes, spanning roughly the 15th to the 19th century.
And it really flourished under the patronage of the Ardalan Principality, didn't it, in northwestern Iran?
It did. What's fascinating is that during the 17th and 18th centuries, it evolved into something called a literary koine.
A kind of shared literary language.
Exactly. Used for literary purposes even by people in the Ardalan domain who might not have spoken Guarani as their first dialect. It became the high-status literary language there.
And it also served as the sacred language for the Ali Haq, or Yarsan, community.
Yes, and their religious texts significantly influenced Guarani literary forms, particularly its poetry. You see that connection clearly.
So, connecting this again to the bigger picture, the flourishing of Guarani literature seems directly linked to the political stability and cultural support from the Ardalan rulers.
Without a doubt. It vividly illustrates how political power or patronage can really foster artistic and literary expression.
But then the flip side, when the Ardalan Principality fell in the mid-19th century, Guarani literature went into decline.
It did. It really highlights the vulnerability, perhaps, of literary prominence to political shifts. Patronage matters.
And that's when we see the rise of the Sirani dialect, under the Baban principality, gradually taking its place.
Precisely. It just goes to show that the fame or prominence of a literary dialect isn't solely about its linguistic attributes. Those sociopolitical factors play a huge role.
Oh. Hannah the Chai Lady's here. Roj Bosh, Hannah.
Roj Bosh. Ah, lovely.
Oh, this smells fantastic today.
Yeah.
Is that a little hint of cardamom I'm getting?
Yes, I think so. Definitely smell that. And look at that lovely rich color. Looks like a good brew today.
Let's give it a taste then.
Cheers.
Yes. That's perfect. A lovely balance of sweetness and spice. Not bitter at all today. Hannah's really outdone herself.
Indeed. This chai is just right. A very welcome moment of warmth, isn't it?
Absolutely. Right, let's take just a few minutes to enjoy this wonderful chai, everyone, and then we'll get back and delve into what's often called the classical zenith of Kurdish poetry. Stay with us.
Welcome back. Refreshed with Hannah's excellent chai, let's turn our attention now to the classical zenith of Kurdish poetry. This period flourished particularly between the 15th and 19th centuries.
Right. And this era saw the emergence of some truly master poets who profoundly shaped Kurdish literary expression for centuries to come.
They were primarily writing in Kurmanji and Gurani.
Mostly, yes. And they were drawing inspiration from, well, multiple sources, those rich oral traditions we discussed, Sufi mysticism. Which emphasizes that mystical union with the divine.
Exactly. And also Perso-Arabic literary conventions. But crucially, they weren't just imitating. They were forging distinctly Kurdish voices within those existing forms.
And leading this period, perhaps the most revered figure of all, is Emadate Zeni, late 17th, early 18th century.
Yes, Zeni, the intellectual, the scholar, a mystic. A towering figure.
And his magnum opus, Mem Uzin, completed around 1695. It's just monumental, isn't it?
It really is. It's a methnoe that's a long poem in rhyming couplets over 2,600 verses. It's widely considered the Kurdish national epic, a real cornerstone of Kurdish literary and cultural identity.
It tells the tragic love story of Mem and Zin, their love thwarted by the villainous Beko, leading to their deaths.
And their eventual union in the grave. But as you hinted, it's so much more than just a love story.
Right. It delves into philosophy, astronomy, mysticism. But also, importantly, this emerging sense of Kurdish national consciousness.
That's a key point. What's particularly insightful and quite explicit in the text is how Zeni laments the disunity among the Kurdish principalities at the time. And their subjugation by the larger Ottoman and Safavid empires.
So his call for unity and self-rule is why he's often seen as a foundational figure of Kurdish nationalism.
Exactly. Mem Uzin functions both as this incredibly poignant narrative and as a powerful political statement for its time.
He was also a fierce advocate for the Kurdish language itself, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. In the prologue to Mem Uzin, he makes a point of demonstrating the capacity of Kurdish for profound literary and scholarly expression. He was directly challenging the linguistic dominance of Persian, Arabic, and Turkish in the region's intellectual life.
So writing this epic in Kurdish was a deliberate act of cultural and linguistic assertion.
Precisely. A statement of pride and capability. And he didn't stop there.
Yeah.
He even compiled Nubihar Besukin, The New Spring of Children.
An Arabic-Kurdish dictionary.
In verse. For children. It just underscores his deep commitment to linguistic development and education among Kurds.
And the enduring fame of Mem Uzin. It's interesting how its interpretation has evolved, initially seen by some as a Sufi allegory.
Yes, representing the soul's yearning for the divine, that kind of mystical interpretation. But later, especially with the rise of modern nationalism, it came to be read more as a secular nationalist allegory.
Representing the divided Kurdish nation's struggle.
Exactly. That interpretive flexibility, those multiple layers of meaning, are key to its lasting impact. It allowed the work to resonate with different ideological perspectives and sociopolitical needs across centuries. It speaks to different generations.
Okay, next up, Malay Sigori. A bit earlier, late 16th, early 17th century.
That's right. A highly influential poet from the Botan region, specifically Caesar. His Diwan, his collection of poems, is considered a landmark, really a foundational moment for the written Kurdish poetic tradition.
And his main contribution was adapting those classical Perso-Arabic poetic forms.
Yes, skillfully adapting and deploying forms like the ghazal, the qasida, the rubai into the Kurmanji dialect.
Which, as we noted, was predominantly oral before him in terms of high literature.
Pretty much. So he really elevated Kurdish, demonstrating its viability as a language for complex, sophisticated literary expression suitable for learned circles and even royal courts.
And his poetry is deeply infused with Sufi mysticism.
Very much so. Themes of divine love, spiritual yearning, the nature of existence they run throughout his work. His ghazals, for instance, often address this enigmatic figure of the beloved.
Which allows for interpretations of both human and divine love.
Exactly. That ambiguity is part of its power. His work is known for its intricate wordplay, really rich, evocative imagery, and significant philosophical depth. He also managed to blend Sufi Islamic thought with broader cultural influences present in Kurdistan at the time, maybe Christian, Jewish, Zoroastrian, Yazidi echoes.
So his adaptation of these prestigious established forms wasn't just aesthetic, it was strategic.
You could definitely see it as a strategic act of cultural legitimation, asserting the linguistic and literary capabilities of Kurdish, challenging any implicit or explicit notions of its inferiority within that wider Perso-Arabic literary sphere, forging a distinct written identity.
Okay, then we have Fakih Tehran, around the same time as Sisiri, 17th century.
Yes, a contemporary from the mixed region of Hikari. He's celebrated for his unique ability to weave together Sufi mysticism with elements of folk tradition and even accounts of historical narratives.
So another key figure in early Kurdish Sufi literature alongside Hariri, Sisiri, and Zani, really founding the broader literary tradition.
Absolutely. His most famous work is probably Zembil Furash.
The Basket Seller, based on a folktale.
Yes, a popular folktale exploring themes of piety, temptation, divine love. What's notable is his use of quite accessible language, drawing heavily on folklore, which really contributed to its wide appeal.
And he's also credited with the first known literary account of a specific historical event, the Battle of Dimdim.
That's right, in his poem, Beta Dimdim, The Ballad of Dimdim. It shows his engagement with contemporary events, acting almost as a poetic chronicler.
He wrote other works, too. Soroka Sheksisenan, Kule Hasperesh.
Yes, the story of Sheikh Sanan, the saying of the Black Horse. His poetry generally is known for its lyrical quality, sometimes described as colorful, and a strong focus on divine love, that concept of Wadat al-Wujud, the unity of existence. Also themes of knowledge, wisdom, the beauty of nature, and women.
It's mentioned he often preferred quatrains, the rubai form, and used a fairly plain, direct-style drawing on folklore.
Which made those potentially complex mystical themes much more approachable for a wider audience.
Mm-hmm.
He really bridged that gap, you could say, between learned Sufi discourse and popular oral culture.
A vital contribution, enriching the literature with a really distinctive voice, and some of his poems even became folk songs.
They did, which further cemented their place in the cultural fabric.
So looking at this classical period overall, maybe 15th, 19th centuries.
A real flourishing, especially in poetry.
Characterized by the skillful adoption and adaptation of Perso-Arabic, forms the ghazal, qasida, rubai, matnawi.
Yes, but adapted. The Kurdish qasida, for example, often went deep into philosophical and mystical ideas. And Grani literature, as we mentioned, had its own take on the ghazal, particularly with its syllabic meter.
And the dominant themes running through it all were love in its many forms.
Divine, mystical, romantic, earthly love, yes. Also, mysticism itself, heavily influenced by Sufism.
Nature and the Kurdish landscape seem crucial, too.
Huge. As symbols of homeland, beauty, freedom. And related to that, the idea of Kurdistan itself, a burgeoning sense of collective identity, plus reflections on wisdom, ethics, human beauty.
And the major influences shaping all this were?
A fascinating mix. Those established Perso-Arabic literary traditions providing formal models and thematic inspiration, Sufism as a major spiritual and intellectual current, and crucially the vibrant world of indigenous Kurdish oral folklore, the stories, the characters, the linguistic vitality. It's this rich synthesis that really defines the unique character of classical Kurdish poetry.
Okay, let's shift gears now and explore the renewal and modern awakening in Kurdish literature. This is roughly the early to mid-20th century.
That's right. A truly transformative phase, often called the renewal period, or Edebiyat-i Tesidud. It was marked by a very conscious, very deliberate effort to modernize literary forms and themes.
Driven by internal changes in Kurdish society, but also external influences.
Definitely. Influences from European literary currents, often coming through Turkish and Arabic intermediaries, played a significant role. It was a time of profound cultural and political ferment. Kurdish intellectuals were actively trying to forge a modern identity.
And within this renewal period, we see the appearance of, well, first Romanticism, then realism.
Yes, often appearing almost simultaneously or in quick succession. Romanticism, with its focus on national spirit, emotion, folklore, kind of paved the way. Then realism came in, focusing more on social realities, offering a more critical edge.
And it's important, isn't it, to understand this wasn't just passive imitation of Western movement?
Absolutely not. It was strategic. These writers adopted and adapted these frameworks to articulate a specifically modern Kurdish identity, to explore those growing national aspirations, and to critique the social and political orders they were living under.
The search for identity found expression through these new approaches.
Exactly. And the rise of nationalism, looking back to figures like Zani as foundational, created really fertile ground. Romanticism offered a way to celebrate heritage, while realism provided tools for social critique. These literary developments were a direct response to that evolving national consciousness.
And spearheading this shift in poetry was Abdullah Goran.
Goran, yes. Often rightly called the father of modern Kurdish poetry. A pivotal figure.
His main goal was to steer Kurdish poetry away from those dominant Arabic and Persian influences.
Consciously, yes. He wanted to create a poetic language, rhythm, form, and content that felt truly rooted in Kurdish reality, its culture, its landscapes, its folklore. Authentically Kurdish.
And he revolutionized the verse itself, introducing blank verse, the prose poem.
Experimenting with new rhyme schemes, breaking decisively from traditional metrical systems like a ruse, which had been standard in classical poetry. It was a fundamental shift.
His own career evolved through phases. Classical, romantic, then more political.
That's a good summary. An early phase engaging with classical forms, then a distinctly romantic period where nature and women were often intertwined themes, and finally a mature phase using free verse to express his strong political commitment to the Kurdish struggle and also to the working class movement.
He also tackled difficult social issues head on, gender discrimination, honor killings.
He did. He wasn't afraid to address those painful realities. His major collections, like Behesti Yadigar, Paradise and Memory, and Fermesco Hunner, Tears and Art from 1950, were hugely influential. His reforms really reshaped the whole trajectory of Kurdish poetry.
Around the same time, we see the emergence of the Kurdish novel, and Arab Shamilov seems key here.
Arab Ishimo, yes. A pioneering role. A Yazidi Kurd from the Kars region who became a prominent writer within the Soviet Union.
He's credited with the first novel in the Kurmanji dialect, Shivani Kurmanka, the Kurdish Shepherd.
That's the one. There's sometimes a little variation in the exact publication date cited, depending on the source or alphabet used, but it's universally recognized as a landmark, often considered the very first Kurdish novel.
And it drew on his own life as a shepherd and his involvement in the Russian Revolution.
Yes, it's partly autobiographical, reflecting his experiences and his communist perspective. He wrote other novels, too, like Gianna Bickstuer, Happy Life, and the historical novel Dim Dim.
The fact that the first Kurdish novel emerged in the Soviet Union is quite telling, isn't it?
It really highlights the diverse geographical centers of Kurdish literary production and how different political and cultural contexts influenced its development. It wasn't just happening in one place.
Okay, who are some other absolutely key figures defining this renewal era? Sigurdsson comes to mind immediately.
Oh, Sigurdsson. Immensely influential. Poet, writer, journalist, historian, lexicographer. A true polymath.
From Mardin in Turkey, but spent much of his life in Syria and later exile in Sweden.
That's right. Writing primarily in Kurmanji, he powerfully articulated themes of Kurdish nationalism, social justice, resistance. He managed to blend modern romantic and realist styles with echoes of classical forms.
And he was quite critical of existing power structures.
Very critical of feudal structures within Kurdish society and also of conservative religious establishments that he felt held people back. His active period was so significant, it's sometimes even called the Sigurdsson period.
He published numerous poetry collections, Kimeyas, is famous, and that poem, Dizgirti Azortin.
The Youth's Beloved, often read as a potent metaphor for Kurdistan itself, besieged but loved. Beyond poetry, he authored works on Kurdish history, compiled a dictionary, collected folklore, a huge legacy.
Then there's Hemin Mukriani from Mahabad, Iran.
Yes, a distinguished poet, journalist, translator, critic. He played a significant role during the short-lived Republic of Kurdistan in Mahabad in 1946. He was even named a national poet, along with Hijar.
That experience must have deeply marked his work.
Profoundly. It shaped his literary and political consciousness. He spent time later in Iraqi Kurdistan, worked in Baghdad at the Kurdish Academy of Science, eventually returned to Iran, founded the Salah al-Din Ayyubi Publishing House, edited the important journal Sirway Breeze,
and his poetry collections, Tariq Urun, Dark and Light, Nali Judeh, The Wail of Separation,
consistently reflect his deep commitment to Kurdish culture, language, and those national aspirations.
And finally, Hajar, another towering figure from Mahabad.
Hajar, yes. Abdurrahman Sharafkhandi, poet, writer, linguist, lexicographer, translator, another incredible intellectual force, also an official poet of the Mahabad Republic and a close confidant of Mullah Mustafa Barzani.
His contributions to the Kurdish language itself were monumental. The first complete translation of the Holy Quran into Kurdish.
An immense undertaking, yes. He also translated Zani's Memuzin into the Sorani dialect, bringing that epic to a wider Kurdish audience. And he translated Omar Khayyam's quatrains.
But perhaps his most enduring legacy is the dictionary.
The Henbane Borin, a comprehensive Kurdish-Persian dictionary, an invaluable resource still used today. His poetry collection, Bu Kurdistan, for Kurdistan, also powerfully expresses patriotic themes. His multifaceted work was just crucial for standardizing, enriching, and preserving Kurdish language and literature.
So these figures, Goran, Shamilov, Serge Erzwin, Hemin, Hajar, they really spearheaded this movement.
Absolutely. Modernizing artistic expression while deeply imbuing it with cultural purpose and national consciousness. A truly pivotal era.
Okay, let's move into the contemporary era then. Mid-20th century up to the present day. We see a continued evolution, right? A really vibrant, diverse array of voices.
Definitely. Contemporary writers, many of whom have directly experienced political turmoil, displacement, life in diaspora, they're grappling with complex themes, identity, conflict, memory.
While also exploring new artistic frontiers, engaging with global literary currents.
Exactly. We see poetry continuing to flourish, but also a real maturation of the novel and the short story, plus developments in modern theater and the growth of literary criticism we'll touch on.
Let's start with poetry. It remains incredibly vital, it seems.
Oh, absolutely. And several poets have achieved significant national and international recognition. Shirko Bakis is impossible to overlook here.
Born in Sulaymaniyye, Iraqi Kurdistan, often considered a founder of contemporary Kurdish poetry.
Yes, one of the most influential and innovative. His themes often revolved around liberty, love, life, nature, but always deeply intertwined with the political, cultural, and spiritual condition of the Kurds.
He was also instrumental in modernizing poetic forms, that Rouand approach.
Right, vision. Introduced in 1971, it involved breaking away from many traditional poetic rules. And later, in 1975, he innovated the poster poem, inspired by visual arts, aiming for a more direct, impactful kind of poetic statement.
He was a leading figure in the Rwanga literary movement in the 70s, too.
Yes, which aimed to connect poetry more directly to real life, address social and political issues, fight suffering through art.
And his poetry often served as a lament for victims of oppression, Halabja, the Anfal genocide.
Very much so. Works like The Small Mirrors, Butterfly Valley are powerful examples. He later established the Sardam Publishing House in 98, another major contribution.
The formal and thematic shifts in his work seem directly linked to that urgent need to articulate the Kurdish experience of crisis.
Absolutely. And his work being widely translated really brought contemporary Kurdish poetry to a global audience.
Then there's Abdullah Pashu, often cited as the most popular living Kurdish poet.
Highly esteemed, widely read, yes. Born in Haller, or Erbil in Iraqi Kurdistan.
Known for lyrical depth, exploring longing, political and personal exile, national identity.
Exactly. He spent significant time in exile himself, Soviet Union, Finland. So displacement is a really recurrent, powerful motif in his work. Collections like Barah Zardapar, Towards Twilight, and Hesbam Huru Rekafim Chia, My Horse is a Cloud, My Stirrup a Mountain, are well known. He's also a noted translator, Whitman, Pushkin into Kurdish.
His poem Union seems to capture that blend of political aspiration and personal yearning we see often.
It does. Latif Helmet is another significant poet who emerged in the 60s, became part of that vanguard in the 70s.
From Kifri, Iraq. His focus was on transforming the language of poetry, using modern techniques.
Yes, really pushing the boundaries of poetic language and form. He has numerous collections, including that early influential God and Our Little City from 1970, crucial in that ongoing modernization process.
And Kajal Ahmad, a prominent female voice from Kirkuk.
A very prominent and bold voice. Her poetry is often described as fierce, sensual. She courageously engages with really challenging, often taboo, social and cultural themes.
Critiquing conservative norms, especially those restricting women. exploring gender equality, exile, homeland complexities.
All of that. Her collection, Handful of Salt, being translated into English, brought her to a wider international readership. She's also a journalist and editor, addressing women's issues and politics directly. Some critics place her among poets, critically engaging with the political establishment, too.
Now, Salim Barkat is an interesting case. Kurdish-Syrian origin, but writes primarily in Arabic.
A unique and influential figure, yes. That choice of language, combined with his deep engagement with Kurdish themes, identity, exile, displacement, makes him stand out.
Renowned for a complex, dense, innovative Arabic style, sometimes called difficult.
Yes, but also praised for his mastery of Arabic prose. There are comparisons to magical realism sometimes. His poetry collections, like The Universe All at Once, are Come, Take a Gentle Stab, reflect this unique style.
So writing in Arabic isn't seen as abandoning Kurdish identity.
Not generally, no. It's often interpreted as a more complex literary strategy, a kind of confrontational relationship with the dominant language, reshaping it to articulate his specific vision. It's a sophisticated form of cultural negotiation, maybe even subversion, addressing Kurdish concerns in a major world language, reaching a wider audience while challenging Arabic norms from a minority perspective, a linguistic intervention, as some have called it.
Fascinating. Okay, let's turn to the novel and short story in the contemporary era. Significant development here, too.
Absolutely. Authors exploring really diverse narratives and themes. Mehmet Uzun is pivotal for the modern Kurdish novel, especially in Kurmanji.
From Turkey, lived much of his life in exile in Sweden. His novels like Two, Marina Kalki Rend, Roni Mina Evine, Taramina Mirine
are celebrated for exploring Kurdish national identity, language, homeland, the complexities of Kurdish subjectivity. They often reflect shared struggles, historical traumas, particularly relating to Kurds in Turkey.
But his later novels apparently portrayed more diverse, sometimes controversial characters, challenging simple ideas of identity.
Yes, he moved towards depicting more complex, sometimes disruptive figures, resisting any kind of monolithic conception of Kurdishness.
Jan Dost is another significant contemporary novelist from Kobani, Syrian Kurdistan, now in Germany.
Yes, known for historical and political fiction. His historical novels consciously aim to, as he puts it, resurrect silent Kurdish histories, blending fiction with research to cultivate national consciousness.
Novels about key moments or figures in Kurdish history.
Exactly. And his political novels engage directly with contemporary events, like the wars in Kobani and Afrin. Kordori Aram is an example. His works are often available in both Kurmanji and Sorani, and frequently offer critical perspectives on power dynamics.
Then Bakhtir Ali from Sulaymaniyya, Iraqi Kurdistan. Highly acclaimed.
One of the most acclaimed, yes. Known for philosophical depth, often using elements of magical realism. Novels like Dwan Yahaman Hinari Dunya, The Last Pomegranate in the World, or Shariyim Issikwari Spiakin, The City of White Musicians.
Exploring themes of hope amidst despair, the search for meaning, the power of fiction itself.
Very much so. He often confronts that blurring of reality and fiction, advocating for inclusivity, equality, love. He's received international recognition, like the German Hilde Damen Prize.
Berz Bukhani, Kurdish-Iranian journalist, writer, filmmaker.
Gained huge prominence for his memoir, No Friend But the Mountains.
Written entirely via text messages while detained on Manus Island by the Australian government. Incredible.
It really is.
Yeah.
It chronicles the harrowing experiences of asylum seekers, won major awards like the Victorian Prize for Literature. He also made the film Chaka, Please Tell Us the Time, wrote the essay collection Freedom, Only Freedom, a major voice in prison literature, resistance writing, and the discourse on displacement.
Sarah Omar, Danish-Kurdish novelist, poet, activist, the first internationally acclaimed female novelist from the Kurdistan region of Iraq.
That's her significant position, yes. Her novels, Dod Vaskarin, The Dead Washer, and Skagadansrun, Shadow Dancer, got a lot of attention for their unflinching portrayal of taboo subjects.
Things like FGM, honor crimes, sexual assault, oppression of women.
Yes. Extremely difficult but important topics.
Hmm.
Her work is a powerful example of literature as social critique and advocacy.
Atanahai is a Kurdish-Iranian novelist and short story writer in Sorani.
Made significant contributions to Sorani prose. Short story collections like Zrake, Scream, Tengani, Trap. Novels like Guli Shoran, Balindakani Demba, Gri Bakhti Halasi. A key figure in the contemporary Sorani literary scene in Iran.
Ida Homa, Kurdish fiction writer. Lecturer from Iran, based in Canada, writes in English.
Her short story collection, Echoes from the Other Land, was nominated for the Frank O'Connor Award. Her debut novel is Daughters of Smoke and Fire. She often explores identity, displacement, the experiences of Kurds, particularly women, She also contributed to that anthology, Kurdistan Plus 100.
And Firat Zori, from Turkey, lived in Sweden. His work delves into the psychological impact of political struggle, defeat, trauma.
Yes, the emotional aftermath. His novel Is a Yeki Bikujim, I Will Kill Someone, explores the experiences of former fighters, themes of melancholy, the psychology of defeat. His short story, Bicyclette, The Bicycle, uses irony to look at social and personal challenges.
And there are other notable works, anthologies.
Right. That Kurdistan Plus 100 collection from 2023, exploring science fiction by Kurdish writers like Omer Dilsaz and Ava Homa. Shahm Kwame's novel Rojava, about liberation and struggle in Syrian Kurdistan. We should also mention Yashar Kemal Kurdish origin, wrote in Turkish, but powerfully depicted marginalized villagers and advocated for Kurdish issues. And there's a forthcoming anthology, Sleeping in the Courtyard, focusing on contemporary Kurdish women and non-binary writers in diaspora themes of displacement, destruction, desire, resilience. Lots happening.
Okay, what about Kurdish theater and drama? It has a complex history, too.
Very complex. Emerged in the early 20th century, developed differently in various regions, and despite facing persecution often, it's been used as a vital tool for nation-building, preserving language and culture.
The first known published play was Meme Alan by Abdurrahim Remy Hakkari in 1919.
That's generally cited as the first. It apparently had both pro-Kurdish and pro-Islamic sentiments, expressing hopes for national recognition.
And in Soviet Armenia, Kurdish theater actually received state support for a time.
It did, interestingly. Figures like Lazo Ahmadmerazi, Hisiye Sindi, Waziri Nadiri emerged there, often collaborating with Armenian artists. Their plays tackled socio-political themes relevant to Kurds in the Soviet context. Mera's Zemene Kui, Pastimes, Lazo's Gustil, The Ring, Cindy's Kutia du Dermanan, Box of Two Medicines. There was even a state Kurdish theater in Alajez from 1937 to 1947 that staged around 30 plays.
And contemporary theater continues to evolve. Figures like Mirza Metin, Erdal Kaya.
Yes, Mirza Metin, known for a minimalist aesthetic, adapting Memluzin. Erdal Kaya, active as a playwright and director in Batman, Turkey. The resilience is shown by things like a Kurdish adaptation of Hamlet, or more recently, the play Manus, based on Behruz Bukhani's experiences.
Themes ranging from cultural virtues to social political realities, resistance, identity.
A wide range, reflecting the concerns of the time and place.
Finally, Kurdish essayists and literary criticism. This field has grown significantly.
It has, providing much-needed analytical frameworks. Scholars like Hashem Ahmedzadeh, Erzlem Belsum-Gallup, Clement Skobert-Yusel have done important work exploring historical figures, contemporary trends, applying theoretical approaches.
Focusing on identity, social political contexts, the role of literature in nation building, aesthetics.
All of those. Amir Hasanpour's essays on Kurds is influential, covering language rights, class, gender, policy, history, nationalism, Marxism. The collection Essays on Modern Kurdish Literature, edited by Morteze and Karangi, covers proverbs, feminist literature, resistance, poetry, prose.
So key themes in criticism include moral imagination, literature identity disputes, social historical context, modernism, postmodernism, collective memory, diaspora, resistance.
Exactly. Plus discussions around language rights, linguicide, gender relations, applying Marxist or feminist theories. That strong focus on identity, nation building, and social context in the criticism really reflects the socio-political realities that have shaped Kurdish history and literature.
This critical work sounds essential for analyzing, interpreting, theorizing Kurdish literature.
Absolutely vital for understanding its depth and evolution.
So if we try to pull back and look at the overarching themes and characteristics across all of Kurdish literature, what really stands out?
Well, several recurring and really powerful themes emerge, clearly reflecting the collective experiences of the Kurdish people.
National identity, resistance, the quest for freedom that seems absolutely central.
Pervasive and defining, you could say. You can trace it right back to classical figures like Emirdzani in Memuzin.
And it continues strongly in the modern and contemporary eras with writers like Shirko Bekes, Memedu Zun, Jan Dost.
Absolutely. Literature has consistently served as this vital tool for, well, nation building in a cultural sense, for cultural survival, and for articulating that collective consciousness.
Then there are the themes of love, nature, and folklore, deeply woven in.
Oh, definitely. Classical poets like Hariri, Fikri Tehran, Zani explored love in all its facets, earthly, divine, romantic, mystical.
And that continues in modern poetry with figures like Goran and Bekes, and nature, the mountains, valleys, rivers.
They're constantly present, often as powerful symbols of the homeland, of freedom, of identity itself. and folklore myths, legends, tales, songs. Kurdish literature draws so extensively from this wellspring, enriching the text while also preserving that heritage.
Given the history, themes of exile, displacement, and memory must be incredibly resonant.
They are, inevitably. So many writers, especially those in the diaspora like Pashu, Uzun, Salim Barakat, Bukhani, they articulate that pain of separation, the challenges of navigating new worlds. Collective memory becomes this source of both identity and, often, trauma. Literary works often function as acts of remembrance, of cultural reckoning.
We also see that increasing focus on social justice, human rights, and significantly, women's voices.
Yes, literature increasingly serves as a platform for critique and advocacy. Early modern writers like Sigur Twin criticized oppression. Later, Picasso expressed deep sympathy for the marginalized. Yashar Kemal championed the downtrodden. And now, the rising prominence of women's voices like Sarah Omar, Kajal Ahmad, tackling really sensitive issues.
And remembering historical figures like Hafsa Khan as an early feminist.
Right. This growing body of work is actively reshaping the literary landscape, bringing new perspectives and challenging norms.
Finally, there's that linguistic complexity and stylistic innovation.
A rich linguistic texture, figurative language, layered meanings, cultural idioms. The classical tradition adapted Perso-Arabic forms skillfully. The modern era saw pioneers like Goran and Bacchus spearheading free verse, prose poetry, and even writers like Salim Barakat pushing boundaries with unconventional styles in Arabic. There's constant linguistic energy.
So wrapping this up, Kurdish literature really stands as this powerful testament to resilience, creativity, the enduring spirit of the Kurdish people.
All of those things. It's a vital chronicle of their history, a rich repository of collective memory, and a crucial force in shaping and articulating their identity over centuries. It reflects their struggles, yes, but also their aspirations, their humanity.
Its role in cultural preservation language, heritage against suppression, seems paramount.
Absolutely crucial. Narrating experiences, codifying language, drawing on folklore, these are acts of preservation. And now, with increasing translation, these voices are entering global literary discourse, reaching wider audiences, fostering understanding. It reinforces cultural continuity internally and acts as cultural ambassadorship externally.
And looking ahead, emerging trends, future directions.
It seems dynamic and promising. Ongoing innovation, adaptation, experimentation with new styles, forms, subjects. Digital platforms are being used more for dissemination, reaching wider, younger audiences, perhaps.
Themes of exile, globalization, identity in a fragmented world likely remain prevalent, alongside freedom and justice.
I would expect so. We're seeing new novelists emerging, like Mehmet Dickel, Seyed Arjeer, exploring fictionalized approaches. Anthologies like Kurdistan Plus 100 or Sleeping in the Courtyard point towards new thematic explorations and voices.
And that growing body of literature in major world languages, plus more translation,
signals greater participation in global literary spaces. I think the continued relevance and vitality of Kurdish literature lies in its ability to articulate the particular Kurdish experience while resonating with universal human emotions and concerns.
Well, we've really only managed to touch the surface today, haven't we, of this incredibly vast and compelling world of Kurdish literature.
It's true. From those ancient epics passed down orally for generations to the contemporary novels winning international awards, it's just such a rich field.
But these works offer such invaluable insights, don't they, into Kurdish history, culture, and just the enduring human spirit.
They absolutely do.
We sincerely hope this exploration has sparked your curiosity, maybe encourage you to delve further into some of the voices and stories we've discussed today.
Perhaps think about what resonated most with you from this overview. Are there particular authors or specific themes you might want to explore in more detail now?
Exactly. And remember, this archive is here to support your continued journey of discovery into Kurdish research. Thanks for joining us.